Welcome to Winning School Watch et al. The show will begin shortly. Diane Linning is the host of the Linning School Watch et al. On Blog Talk Radio. The show brings sought-after information about education. Also brings information about schooling alternatives, which we're going to talk about tonight. We will often have guests, and we have call-in opportunities for parents, educators, and interested parties to get your questions answered for those who want to know our kids can get a quality education in America today. Get your pen and pencil. The toll-free number to call in is 877-497-9937. We will begin in a moment. We have quite a few websites for you tonight, so get your pen and pencil ready and a piece of paper.
Thank y'all very much for listening to us. It's been a pleasure to play for you. Thank you so much. On the guitar and with the vocals, Mr. Gintrow. Gintrow on the guitar and the vocals.
Hi. Is this Bev?
On the bass and some of the vocals, Mr. Keith Mosley.
Hi. Is this
on
Bev?
Yes, it is. Mr. Jeff Stein.
Hi. We'll be starting in a moment. As soon as we quit the music, glad you're on. I pushed the right button. Welcome to Linning School Watch et al. This is Diane Linning, your host for this evening, and we're doing our number three part of our three-part series with Beverly Huffman, and we are talking about important education issues that all of us in America need to know, and one of them tonight is, again, what are some of our resources for alternative education for our kids in America. For those of you who object to the current agenda that has been passed in the state of California, which requires an indoctrination of social issues that are against some people's religious beliefs. And we have some alternatives that we can share with you tonight, so be sure you have your pen and pencil ready. I have a few websites I can give you to look up information and ideas. And I want to just give you one before we start. As far as a resource of where you can start if you want to, by your personal choice, take your kids out of public schools, I would suggest a good place to start is Google.
Oh, no.
I'm so sorry we got disconnected. I hope I'm back on. I'm going to try just a little bit of music. If I hear that, then I'll know we're on. We'll be right back. Well, we are evidently having technical difficulties tonight. I'm sorry about that. I'm going to keep talking, assuming it is on. There we go. Apparently the sound is back on. I'm hoping our guest will call back in. Again, I was giving you a website. You can check in each one of your counties for the Department of Ed for your county and find out about homeschooling as an alternative method of schooling if you prefer or choose to take your young people out of public education. Now, as a public educator for over 30 years, if all your kids were in my class, I would feel real good about sending all your kids to my class. But unfortunately, we have many on the other end of the spectrum who are indoctrinating from their personal views. Now, I don't know all their names or exactly where they teach, but that's a homework assignment for you for your local school district. That's the responsibility of a parent to decide what kind of school you want in your local district, attend school board meetings, and give your opinions and help approve the textbooks, etc. So that's the kind of responsibility it's taking nowadays to have the kind of education you want for your children. Be sure to get a pen and pencil to write down our call-in number and some websites I can give you. The call-in number is toll-free 877-497-9937. Please give us a call if you have questions or want to make a short comment. A couple of other websites that you might be interested in is www.nea.org. That happens to be the National Education Association. Again, that's www.nea.org. You can look on that website and see pretty much the national agenda for education in our schools. Another one is www.unionfacts.org. That's unionfacts.org. Personally, I believe that when you talk from an informed perspective and you know the facts, people are more apt to listen to you, and you're more apt to have credibility in your discussions in the public forum. So it looks like my friend is back. Oh, I'm hoping she doesn't get cut off. I don't know what happened. She was on for a while, so if I push this button, please, and you get cut off, please call back again, Bev. I don't know what happened. You know, I don't think I want to push that button again. Let's see, this one says green. I'll try this one. Hi, Bev, can you hear me? Okay, I'm going to try the other one that I pushed last time and hope that it works. Hi, Bev, can you hear me? Hi, Bev. Well, it looks like I'm probably going to have to call her again tonight. So I have to, that screen has to come up for me to be able to call her. We'll be right back with you in a moment. We've been having technical difficulties. Sorry about that. It cut me off again. If you want to email questions, email me at diane@lenning.com. And, okay, I see my friend Bev, too, is having difficulty calling in. But at least it hears like we're back on. So enjoy the music for a couple of moments here, and we'll be right back. Sorry about the technical difficulties tonight. I think I was speaking for 5 moments and it was off air. So I'm going to recap again. I was talking about Capital Resource Institute, which is a California state advocacy group that works in the state of California to help citizens connect with advocacy for issues that you agree. And one of the issues Capital Resource Institute is helping with is the petitions for Stopping 48. I believe there is a website for that. I think it's stop48.com. You can Google it and find out. And there are several groups, 6 or 8 groups, who are helping get this petition out to have this referendum of this bill that has been passed in California, SB 48, promoting the homosexual lifestyle in school curriculum. This has prompted many individuals to be upset about their young people being in public school, and I'm not sure if it was on air a while ago, but I said one of the things you can do is check with your county education on their website. Your County Department of Education, just Google that and find their website. And often you can take courses right through your Department of Education through your county. That usually works in every state. I know for sure it does in California. A little bit about CRI. Now she's back in and I'm afraid to press anything. Oh, just pray I press the right button. If anybody has an idea, here's my choices. I've got a question mark that says mute. I've got a microphone that says live. That's what I pushed last time. She was on for a while and it went dead. Another one says mute. Another one says screen, which, you know, I should be able to chat with her, and that did nothing. And the other one hangs up. So if you want me to take a guess, Bev, at which one to push, you can email me. Again, my choices are to push the microphone that says live or the chat bubble that says screen use. So I'm going to go with the one you picked this time and see if, hey, you know, here's a button. Here, oh, no, that's call a guest. Oh, I found how I could call you if I lose you. Okay. Here we go. So I'm hoping this works. You tell me which one you want me to pick, Bev, and I will try it. Okay, so we were talking about Capital Resource Institute. Their website is www.capitalresource.org. Remember to have your pen and pencil handy. Another good website to look up information about education is www.nea.org. or www.unionfacts.org. I'm a resource person, and I believe in knowing your information to have credibility when you're discussing facts and information in the forum. And another group that's a good one to learn about the homosexual agenda is PFOX. That's www.pfox.org. That's the letter P as in parrot. FOX.org, and I'm going to talk a minute about that as well tonight. So remember this CRI is a great group to connect with. You can get their newsletters. They have a City on the Hill Day, which the annual youth conference teaches students 14 to 18 about legislative process. They have a day at the Capitol, which teaches U.S. citizens how to talk with your lawmakers about public policy and about pro-family information. They track legislation and have an annual recap each year with a legislative scorecard. I think that's a great resource. To just find the whole ball of wax in one resource, it's all connected when you're talking about education, because education is funded by politicians who decide whether or not, she said, push the microphone again. Okay, we're going to go with what Bev picked. Will it be the right button? What do you think? Oh, I hope I don't lose you. But I did find a thing up here to call you, so I hope you emailed me your phone number. Here we go. Do I hear you, Bev?
You hear me.
Oh, thank goodness. Okay, I don't know what happened last time. We were on like this, and it just cut us off. So I'm going to let you talk right on. Have you heard me at all?
Just little tiny bits and pieces.
Okay, well, you can springboard off of anything I've said, or just talk. We were going to try to give resource information tonight for people about alternative education. So you're ready to go? Get it in now. Fast and furious.
Yeah, really. Well, my best advice would be to pull the kids out of school. Either homeschool them, do the online school. I was thinking about checking into that myself for my daughter, the online, but
uh-huh.
I haven't really researched it yet. So I'm not really sure how that works. I mean, besides going online.
Well, I can tell you that. I'm in online education right away, and my nephew went to school from about 4th grade through 12th grade online, and
really?
They loved it, and I love it, because I have assignments that are tracked, and I turn in my work, and I have a chat class with a teacher, and you have video lectures that you listen to. I think it's awesome, and you could even do it with a group of 3 to 5 students around your computer if you're doing a co-op.
Uh-huh.
Or homeschooling. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great alternative. I hope you look into that. Okay, I'll give it back to you.
Well, I'm wondering about cost of these things too, though, because a lot of people, you know, are hurting right now. There's a lot of people out of work and everything. So we have to try to think about that also. But I know I homeschooled for years with my oldest daughter. And, you know, we really enjoyed that a lot. I did that mainly because my girls are 9 years apart, and I wanted there to be some kind of bonding between my girls. So I started the homeschool thing. And we actually had quite a group through our church that was homeschooling. Started out as, I think it was 6 families that started it. And within 2 years, it had grown to over 200 families in the homeschool.
Wow.
You know, and we did, it was kind of a homeschool support group. And what we did was we met at the church, and you know, every parent played a part. You would, you know, teach something or, you know, help with the kids and all that stuff. So everybody was involved, and it was really, really neat. And, you know, the kids had, you know, a couple days a week where they were interacting with all the other kids in the homeschool support group. And the rest of the week was yours, and you could do what, you know, the lessons you wanted to do. But that worked out really good. But I really like that idea about the co-op as far as getting somebody in the area that teaches and, you know, getting a bunch of kids together and maybe even, you know, doing a homeschool program that way. And, you know, everybody maybe pitching in a few bucks, you know, to help pay for the teacher and stuff like that. I think that would be a really good idea.
You could also have local field trips. We went on one today to a museum in our local city in which the art exhibits are traveling around the country, and we saw an artist who was the one who invented the mobiles, the hanging art, and where we get our mobiles for cribs, and also the attachment for when you can hang your purse from the table. And that was then, you could do those kinds of things on field trips.
Wow. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's. I think there's a lot of alternatives for people. You know, if you're not strapped for money, then probably a private school would be the best alternative for those that are, you know, both working and everything like that. But I'm really an advocate of homeschooling. I think that's really an asset to the children because they have so much time with the parents and, you know, there's so much interaction. And it seems like those that homeschool actually do a lot more with their children, you know.
You know that their test scores are higher, generally speaking.
Oh, you know, ironically, I homeschooled my oldest daughter. Let's see, she was going into, I believe it was the fourth grade that she was going into, and I homeschooled her. And I homeschooled her all the way up until, let's see, she went a part of the semester in junior high, and, throughout junior high, I would let her go for part of the semester so that she could, you know, interact with the kids and stuff like that. And then in high school, of course, we moved down here when she was in high school. So when we got back down here, she went into kind of a homeschool program type thing here also for her senior year.
Is it still ongoing, that program?
You know what? I don't really know. I haven't really looked into it. I had my younger daughter in a charter here. I wasn't real thrilled with it, though. And for a lot of people, it is a real good alternative, charter schools. But they, too, are run through the public schools, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they are, often.
Yeah.
They have a little bit of difference in what they can do, though, as far as their guidelines. They can be selective in the students they take.
Yes, they can. And you know, they're for an average student, you know, my daughter was always, she always, you know, achieved. I mean, she got B's and A's. But when she went into that program, they put so much work on her. I'm not kidding you. She just fell off. And I think part of that was because she wasn't with the kids that she grew up with in school. So she was kind of rebelling herself a little bit, and so I had a little bit of a difficulty with that. But I stuck her back in public school, and now I'm really seriously thinking, you know, I need to get her out of there. But she's got this semester and next, and then she's out. But I'm really, really right on the fence about pulling her completely out. I told her it's actually going to be up to her. We're going to see how well she gets up in the morning.
Well, maybe my next question will help you decide. I was wondering if you were to list 3 to 5 ways, maybe we'd have to talk through it to bring it out of your thinking, 3 to 5 things, if you were to compare the characteristics you have observed of students in homeschooling versus those in public school.
Oh, there is such a difference. Oh, my land sakes.
Well, people need to hear this. People need to hear it.
I mean to tell you, when you have the homeschool group, you see the difference. I mean, big time. I mean, most of them are very respectful, very polite. They get their work done. They don't rebel against you. And see, now I had that problem with my younger daughter when I put her in the charter. Mainly, I think it was because she had been in the public school all this time. I think I homeschooled her through like her kindergarten I think I did that and part of first grade, and then we moved. So I put her into regular school when we got here. But the difference is like night and day. I mean, when the kids are homeschooled, they are just, they're just wonderful kids to be around. They really are.
And what do you notice about those that were in public school in your area? Not that they're all this way, but, you know, what did you
observe? They're not all that way, but their attitudes are very, very sarcastic and rude. And, you know, they just kind of have an air about them that says, you know, don't bother me. I can do what I want, and you're not going to tell me what I can do and what I can't. I mean, I worked in the public schools for a while, and for about 5 years. I was in special ed, and, you know, of course, I had the ED children, so they were, you know, really, some of them were really off. And they're just totally, they have no concept of relating to authority at all. It's like they're, they don't care. They don't care who you are or, you know, what your title is. I mean, I would sit there and watch them interact with the principal of the school, and oh my land sakes, they were just, I mean, rude, sarcastic and rude.
How did the principal discuss with them? I mean, what was his approach and response and demeanor, kind of a thing? I think
well,
this is
you
an
know,
important issue.
For the most part, you know, the principal was doing his job or her mm-hmm. job at the time. And you know, she would basically take the child into the office and sit the child down and say, okay, you know, tell me what's going on. And approach it from their viewpoint, not, you know, throwing authority at her at them.
Right.
But basically allowing them to talk through it. But, you know, a lot of the kids, they have a lot of, well, that's what they are, emotionally disturbed. You know, they have a lot of traits that are common with that. I mean, they just, you know, they don't know how to deal with things. They don't know how to react, and it's not always their fault in those situations, because a lot of that has to do with their upbringings. A lot of these kids were, you know, were in families that had gang members and you know, a parent in prison or something, you know. So you know that there was a lot of bad things going on in the home.
Okay,
so,
now, Bev, this is an issue I would like to dig under the surface a bit, and just let me tell you a little perspective from a teacher's viewpoint, but I'm wanting to hear your viewpoint as an observer, a parent, someone who's not a teacher, because I've heard a lot what teachers say, but basically what I saw was that I had to work the hardest I've ever worked in the last 10 of my 30 years of teaching, mm-hmm. to teach and instruct and insist on acceptable interactive communication skills with others and with young people to adults and authority figures. They were missing that. But the vacuum was filled with was a young person who grew up without instruction in how to relate properly with even just adults on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to pinpoint here where our schools have gone wrong and how we can fix that. So it would start in the lower grades, and then it just blossoms out in junior high, and then it kind of comes back in a little bit in high school when we really get them a little more under control and face them, you know, here's what's expected. The first 5-10 years I taught, well, when you know, when you and I went to school, you got trouble for chewing gum in the hall. Well, hey, if
yep.
that's all I had, life would have been wonderful. I
yeah.
mean, it was keeping dope out, weapons, abortion
mm-hmm.
from happening in the school, knifings, standing
mm-hmm.
up, showing porno, sharing porno sites, standing up, asking for jobs from girls. I mean, this was an ongoing process I dealt with in a public high school. And this was how the kids came to me. So we're missing something in the last 10, 20 years. And I'm hoping maybe we can find it tonight.
Well, okay, I personally think a lot of that has to do with the award system. Every child is awarded, whether they deserve an award or not. And that starts in kindergarten and right on through all the elementary school grades. So, of course, you know, these kids are told that no matter what they do, they're good kids, they're, you know, everything. They throw all this positive on the kid, and they do not correct the negatives. And that's where the problem lies. They've allowed these kids to get away with this and, you know, have rewarded them throughout the years. I mean, I have been in classrooms where teachers literally would try to make something up to give a kid an award.
Oh.
And, you know, I mean, that's wrong. You have to, if these kids, you know, come from homes that are broken and stuff, you kind of understand where they're coming from, but that does not give them a pass in life. You have to, you know, you have to redirect them. And I don't think the schools are doing that. And another thing is the schools focus too much on social issues. They do not focus on academics. And,
well, I agree with that.
And so what do you get? You get kids that, you know, the teachers are befriending the children rather than being the authority figure in the class. They're, oh, you know, this is my friend so-and-so. Matter of fact, I worked in a classroom where the teacher called all the kids in that classroom her friend, and that drove me nuts. She'd say, this is my friend Johnny, you know. Let's hear what my friend Johnny has to say and stuff like this. Now, these are elementary school kids, but the teacher is not supposed to be the friend.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a parent is not supposed to be the kid's friend.
Okay, that erodes the hierarchy of relationships in society.
Yes, it does. And not only that, that tells the children they do not have to respect anybody because everybody is their peer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's wrong. I mean, how can you possibly expect a child to grow up having any respect for any person, whether it be a boss later in life or a spouse or anybody, you know, if they are taught that everybody is their peer?
Well, you know, that goes along with the idea of no one's an expert anymore either, because
yep.
they all equally know all the information. And I know that I've noticed some young people have difficulty discerning an expert who's speaking and when the information is valid or not valid, because everything goes in that kind
yeah.
of classroom you're talking about.
Yeah, and that's how it is.
Well, one of the things I noticed was that incentive programs that met my standards were what worked very well. And I helped young people work toward it till they all achieved it. Some could not read. I worked with them and gave them the tools until they could all read. When I started back into the high school system, I had 9th, 10th, and 11th graders I was getting who read on the first, second, and third grade level. And I got many of those to jump up 6 years of reading in a year just
wow.
by giving them good skills and good teaching. You know, I was a resource teacher and a mainstream ed teacher in public schools, and I know the old adage that good teaching is good teaching, regardless of the kind of student you have. And when what we noticed was a significant problem with a lot of the middle students, C and B students, not
mm-hmm.
succeeding either. And so we had A students and D and F students.
Mm-hmm.
And what was happening was that the good methods of teaching were kind of gone to the wayside. I was taught the inquiry method, where I ask a lot of questions. If you watch me on Facebook, that's what I do. I use the inquiry method. It's a method whereby you get your young people to begin to think about the issues, to reason through it, to look for and research the information when they're missing it, and then they become an expert. You have standards, acceptable standards. And that seems to be a real important issue you hit on here tonight, Bev. And I'm really glad you've come in from a perspective outside of being an educator.
Well,
you hit on it.
Well, I think there's a lot of people out there that realize what is going on and why things are the way they are. Because, you know, I have a lot of friends that are decent people. They, you know, they teach their children respect, and their children respect them. And they go to school, and those same children in a classroom are the ones that you will see are respectful to the teacher. Any of the other ones, I mean, you know, it's horrible, and it's sad that children are not being brought up in their own homes to respect, you know, adults. And that's what happens. And, you know, I can remember when I was a teenager, my dad and those, pardon the expression, damn hippies, you know.
Everything.
Yeah, those damn hippies. And you'd hear that all the time, you know. And, I mean, shoot, I was always afraid to even bring a boy home, you know, because he might have a little bit longer hair and he was going to be a damn hippie, you know. And I mean, most of these kids were back in my time. I'm sure I'm in the same range you were in.
Yes.
But back in that day, you know, the kids were still very respectful to adults.
Yes,
but
they were.
They were. And things have changed over the generations because if I remember correctly, back in the 70s and 80s, you know, when people would have kids, it was no longer their children were their children. They were then, I don't know who that doctor was, but anyway, they used
doctor
to always...
Doctor started with an S, Spock.
Spock, yes.
Spock.
You know, and it was all about, oh, you have to praise your child, you have to reinforce your child. Well, sure, you tell your child when they do things good.
Yes.
But don't praise them for things that are not good, you know?
Uh-huh.
I mean, you don't... I think what happened is people got off thinking that everything had to be positive in their child's life. So regardless if they were naughty, they were never scolded. They were maybe set in a chair and talked to, "Now, Johnny, we don't do that." And I mean, I've heard people talk to their little ones like that. They never discipline. They never raise their voice. And, you know, I'm sorry, but a child has to know. And that doesn't mean you yell at them constantly or, you know, hit them and abuse them. But I was never one to spare the rod with my child. I, you know, my hand served its purpose across their bottoms, you know.
Well, in part of my education to become a teacher, we had a class called behavior modification, in which you could modify young people's negative behavior to be positive, and it did not include all this self-esteem, you're wonderful for everything you do. But if
yes.
you just took that one step back and just said you're wonderful for all the things they did that were wonderful and didn't
yeah.
say anything for the bad, but just kind of looked at them and said, redirected them to, here, come on in and get focused on your work and have a seat. We need to be staying in our seats to do our work. You're not reprimanding a student. You're giving them the expectation of what they need to do. And it's only when that doesn't work then you would need to explain it, take them off to the side and explain a little more about. But it's a lot of it is giving your expectation in a positive way. And if you do this, you'll get this reward, or we'll be able to have this later. And that can go a long way for bringing kids who are generally pretty good to being very good.
Yeah.
And working well together.
Well, you know, and even those that were in the special ed class, you know, in the emotionally disturbed class, I mean, some of those kids, they would, it was like they would shut down. You couldn't say anything to them, or the teacher couldn't, you know, couldn't ask them a question or anything. They would just totally shut off. And I can remember several times after a child had really had a meltdown, you know, they went ballistic in the classroom. And I remember several times taking kids and walking them outside, sitting down on the stoop outside the classroom, and just, you know, just sitting there and talking to them just like you would talk to anybody, and just kind of letting them lead the discussion, you know. And that worked wonders with so many of those kids, because I don't think a lot of those kids were ever allowed to ever express themselves and you know, get their own emotions out in their own homes. I think a lot of them, you know, were so suppressed that they just needed that. They just needed to be able to talk to somebody.
That brings to mind something similar to that worked for me as an educator. I taught resource students in high school, which is one standard deviation from the mean, which they are in mainstream most of the time, but just are in resource class for maybe one or two classes, sometimes three. And I would just say, well, you know, Reuben or Jane or whatever their name was, we've tried this, this, and this, and none of these things work. What's going to work with you?
Yes.
And, you know, they almost always had an idea.
Isn't it amazing?
Well, if you tried this, I think I could do it if we did this, Mrs. Lenning.
Uh-huh.
It's
amazing.
Worked.
And I think that's a big problem. I mean, you know, yes, we are talking about schools, but a lot of it is from how they perceive life through their own home life, because a lot of these kids that are, you know, special ed kids have such horrendous home lives, it's not even funny. Well, even those three little foster kids that I had for a while, my goodness, and they were just babies. They were 3, 4, and 5 years old. They were siblings. And they had been so emotionally, physically, and sexually abused that they just, you know, I mean, they, my goodness, they were a handful. But, you know, I got through it and managed to get facilitate them back to where they belong, and thank goodness for that. But it's just amazing how kids will shut down through a lot of, you know, their emotions. They just don't know how to handle it.
Yeah, it's a coping mechanism.
Uh-huh. And, you know, people, I don't know, I think that there are times to reprimand a child, but there are times that you have to allow them to express to you how they're feeling, you know. So, and I don't know, that's just me. I know the experts have other ways of doing these things, or so they call themselves experts.
Well, on the high school level, I would have some real extreme, bizarre behavior sometimes. And so I would just say, all right, outside. And I mean all the kids, so then you could hear a pin drop. And I'd take them outside. We'd have a little powwow. And we decided what we were going to do. And there was going to be a parent contact. Usually, if I had a system where I worked by, you know, first offense, kind of a lower level consequence. They all learned my system of consequences because they all experienced it. And after about 3 years, I would have, and I never really raised my voice or yelled at them or accepted, just get their attention. Hey, you know, over there because I had a soft voice. But I mean, I never yelled at them angrily. And then the kids started coming in, and somebody would say a cuss word or a foul thing, and another student would say, Mrs. Lenning doesn't allow that in her classroom.
Well, good. They do, didn't they? But you
see, the word got around.
But you see, that's the whole difference, Diane. That is the whole difference. You had control of your classroom. I have been in classrooms because I was in the school system for about 5 years. I was special ed and would go to different classrooms. Well, a couple, you know, for a couple of, well, actually 3 semesters of that, I was in a classroom all semester. But it was amazing to me. And you could see the teachers that had control. You could tell. You could walk down the corridor, you know, and look in the classrooms and tell which teachers had control of their classrooms. It was amazing to me. I mean, I was like dumbfounded. I couldn't believe that teachers didn't have control of their classrooms. And, you know, and they gripe about the class size. Well, I have to disagree. I have to disagree. I think that if you are a good teacher that has control of your classroom, it wouldn't matter how many students were in it. Yes, it, you know, maybe as far as like grading and stuff like that, that becomes a lot when you've got a lot. But as far as having control of the classroom, it shouldn't matter how many kids are in that classroom.
But it does take 2 to 3 years to work up a reputation so all the kids know your system of consequences.
Right.
I know, yeah. I know that when I got into special ed, a resource, the principal wanted to give me 3 students and 8 students in a class, and he thought he was doing me a favor. Well, they didn't think they were in a class. So
yeah.
I said, I want at least 12, preferably 16, maybe 20. I mean, within 3 years, I was like running a mainstream class with all resource students.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I had my own classroom and a pattern of working the classroom with a system of consequences that were fair, reasonable, and did not target anyone or give favoritism, but they all had to follow the expectations and the guidelines.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that was another thing that I was surprised. When I was in this ED class, there were only like 8 students in that classroom. There were 4 assistants besides the teacher in there.
Whoa.
Well, no, I take that back. There were 3 assistants and the teacher. So that means each one of us had 2 students.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Now, the teacher across the way from me who had the SED students severely emotionally disturbed, started with smaller group and insisted on larger classes too because we had 250 special ed students in our school. We became a magnet school because people were sending their kids to our department because we had 8 really qualified older teachers who'd done it for years, and we were just had wonderful success. And this teacher had, she liked 18 to 20 as well. And she had a small room that they all fit in tightly, so they couldn't get up and wiggle around. And then she had usually 1 aide or 1 assistant to help her. And you can do it, but it takes a real commitment and structuring and working out a plan, an education plan to be consistent with. Yes.
But you know what? I think that's why you hear so many complaints from parents as far as the schools and stuff and the classrooms is because most of the teachers, I mean, there is maybe in every school you might find 1 or 2 teachers that are truly, truly, and I'm talking about in the elementary school levels, but, you know, 1 or 2 teachers that are truly, truly committed. And the other teachers, you know, it's just a job for them. They don't really care. They want to get through the day and, you know, go about their business. But it's really sad. I mean, I think that's what's missing in our schools is dedication by the teachers. And I'm not saying that all teachers are not dedicated because I know Most of them will tell you that they are, but then yet if you walk in their classroom and sit there and observe for a day, you will see that they're not as dedicated as they say they are. And that's
sad. Well, I know teachers too go through health problems, but yet you're still expected to teach at your optimum level of ability. And that's where we can have support to help teachers get through these times of crisis. You know, they have problems just like everybody else.
Sure.
And when we knew our fellow staff members were ill and being treated as other educators, we would try to help fill the gap or give them a period off once in a while or work
and that's
with them.
Dedication. That's
right.
Dedication. And
right.
That's what you don't see that much. I mean, when... In my opinion, as you know, I'm very anti-union, and that's just the way I am because I really feel that the unions have really distorted everything in our educational system. You know, the teachers are protected by the unions, and in a way that's sad because it's like a child being protected by the mother, and, you know, You've got to let that child, you know, grow and spread their wings and make their own decisions and do their own thing. But I feel that the unions, they come down as big protectors of the teachers, but they're not giving the teachers a reality check. The teachers are just, you know, they're going to school and they're doing what they have to do to get through the day, and then they're going home.
Ben, will you hang on with me here? I'm going to act like this is the end of the show, but last time I did this and we had time afterwards, so I won't turn it off because
okay.
This is for the archives, so I'm going to play music like this is the end of the show, but hang on, people. We'll be back. And talk a little bit more about the unions. I was a union leader, so I'd like to discuss that. So hang on with us. We'll just act like we're ending the show here, but we'll be back.
Okay.
So thanks so much for joining us. If you want to contact me, it's Diane@Lenning.com. And I have pushed the music here to play music, but here it goes. Maybe this will do it. Okay, thank you so much for being with us tonight. This has been Lenning School Watch et al., and we look forward to seeing you the first Wednesday of the month next month. And please email me your questions. I'm still figuring out how to work the call-in. I did finally get it working tonight, but I think they were cutting me off. I really did, so I pushed the same button. So I love you. I love you. I hope we'll all hear from you next time. God bless and take care. Okay, we're back with Beverly. And we're talking about the unions in schools, and I'd just like to make a little comment about that. And I'm sure Bev will have an opinion. I was a union leader, a state delegate, one of 25 state delegates among 330,000 educators in California. For a number of years, I went to CTA and NEA conventions as a representative, and many of my friends said they went once and could never go back. Well, I hung in there because I care so much about our kids. And what I found was basically the union was more interested in increasing their benefits and salaries and progressing or pushing their liberal agenda. And I kept standing up and saying, I want a professional organization. I'd like an organization that gives us ideas about how to have classroom control, how to teach better, how to have a good curriculum so our students achieve at a higher level, on and on and on, to no avail. But I kept saying what I believe our teachers really need is professional development and mentoring and oversight the first 5 to 10 years they're teaching, because it is a shock when you go from an individual and in classes where it's usually the ones who are more academic oriented, and then all of a sudden you have these kids in public school who you've never seen anything like it before, many teachers were at a loss unless they kind of have a natural instinct. So I don't know. There's my perspective of being in the union. I'm still a retired union member because I want to have a voice out there, but I do not agree with everything they do. But I think that them hearing my opinion is probably better than me hearing theirs, because they don't hear mine often. So what do you think about that?
Well, you know, it's funny because I had almost that same discussion with a friend of my sister's who was a teacher. And I asked her, I said, well, why are you part of the union? You know, why are you a member? You know, you can opt out. And she says, well, I feel that I have a voice. And I said, but what is it that you're telling them, and what are they doing? Are they listening to your voice? You know, and that's a big thing to me. If the unions are saying they're there for the teachers, what are they there to do? Are they there to allow them, the teachers, to make decisions, or, you know, anything like that? Or are they there to control what goes on in the schools? And
they are there to dish out their talking points and their agenda. But the people might want to know what I did. You can opt out just for the political portion and have that portion donated to a charity in your local area, which is what I did.
Well, that's a good idea. But, you know, and she was, I think she was a little bit offended when I was talking to her about it. And she's such a sweetheart. I love this lady.
Uh-huh.
But, and I would never, you know, be mean as far as telling her she's wrong for doing what she's doing. But that is truly the way I really feel is, you know, if you're there to have a voice, what is your voice actually doing that is making things better? I mean, when you're up against the unions, is your voice even being heard? That's a big thing to me. I mean, yes, we all have freedom of speech, but if your voice is not, what you're saying is not being heard, then what's the purpose of being able to say it?
Well,
you know?
I could tell you some positive benefits that came from us who have chosen that path. And I encourage anyone who stays in the union to work it hard or opt out, like, well, definitely the political portion, but maybe opt out, or whatever your choice is, I'm willing to work with you and support you on that. But what I found was that we worked really hard to be heard every year. We had things we talked about on a 10,000-member floor every year, and they'd never heard it before about 30 of us got together and started in about 2010. And it was really confrontive, semi-violent, mafia-style, tracking me, until they just saw we weren't going to go away. And every time they kept pushing us, we just went around them and went higher. And they saw that we weren't going to give up. But what the valuable things I learned are is how their process works, how they work politics, and how I can use those same techniques I learned from them to respond and have a credible voice that counters their agenda. The problem is they basically have everything locked up in the nation now, including the money and positions in almost all elected positions in many states, not all of them. California is locked up. It's totally union, and there are other states like that. Interestingly enough, I found the CTA, California Teachers Association, to be more liberal and to the left of NEA. NEA was tolerating us and wanting us to have our voice on the floor, used Robert's Rules of Order, and wanted us to express our freedoms and our rights. But CTA plotted and were devious to try to get us to fail and were downright mean and in our face. Well, it's not surprising because the number one problem, or I should say it a little differently, California has is number one with the problem of bullying in schools. And I have seen where they learn that from some teachers who are bullies.
Mm-hmm.
And most teachers are not, but when you have enough who are, who teach it, then there are kids who think that that's how they're supposed to act too, to win their way.
Yeah.
So that's my personal take on it. I've come out a stronger advocate than when I went in. It either makes you or breaks you, I think. I think it's made me stronger with a desire and a drive to do this radio show, for example, or to blog on Facebook, or to help someone in an election, I agree with, get elected. Now, the school boards, most of them, are controlled by the union as well. But you say, how can they control them? Well, it's not, they don't stand over them with a whip. It's they pay for their campaign to get them elected.
Exactly.
And they're on all their flyers, and they don't have to work that hard because it's like soft political donations. They
yes.
often reimburse them for their filing fees, which were from anywhere to $1,000 to $5,000 to run for a school board around the state. So if you have somebody offering you to pay for that, to pay for $100,000 worth of advertising and soft money, to get your name out there, almost an automatic win, and endorsements, et cetera, are you going to do what they want when they ask you? Probably. So that's how they do it. It's similar to kind of this self-esteem scheme they've used in the schools.
Mm-hmm.
Just appease them with whatever they want, and they'll do what we want. Except that
I think that's exactly a good point you make, and that's why we see what we see today is the fact that, you know, corruption runs deep. I mean, you know, I don't know, but I can remember my dad saying, you know, a deal was made on a handshake, you know, and mm-hmm. honesty and you know, just being a good person, where now it's everything is about the dollar. What can they do for me? It's not what can I do for you. It's what can they do for me. And that's what's happening in our society is there's so much corruption and people are not thinking clearly. They're not thinking about the next guy. They're thinking about them. And that's where a lot of these kids get it. It's, you know, you do what you want regardless of what they tell you to do. It's all self-gratification.
Yes.
And that's what we're seeing a lot of. And that's wrong, really.
We're almost to the point where you have to have everything in writing. And even then, they might fight you behind your back to sabotage the agreement you made if they didn't like it just exactly a certain way.
Yeah, and you know what? When I was in the Air Force, I'm sorry, that just
go ahead.
Rang a bell. When I was in the Air Force, that was one thing they told us. You write everything down. Write everything down.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to protect yourself. And that's, you know, and that's really sad that it has gotten to that point that you have to do, you have to write everything down. And deals cannot be, yeah, and deals cannot be made on a handshake anymore because the guy you're making the deal with, he's a crook, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're teaching the children these days, and that's what they're seeing, and that's why, you know, I mean, just listen to your rappers on radio and stuff like that, and, you know, that's all you need. Watch a few of the Teen Nick shows. That's all you need to see what's going on. It's all about self-gratification. It's not about right and wrong. It's about self-gratification.
Well, I think this has been a very apropos discussion tonight about the differences of homeschooling and public schools, and we brought out some of the reasons why it's different and some of the things you can do to protect your children from agendas that you don't agree with, in many cases are against people's religious belief, and that we don't have to have an education system against what we believe or that dumbs down our kids. Your kids can be educated. There are other avenues. We want to give you hope for that. And you can feel free to email me if you want any of these websites I gave tonight and suggestions about how to pursue that. My email again is diane@lenning.com. And I'd like to say I think this has been one of the most interesting nights we've had on a discussion on a personal level. I hope people who are listening can learn and benefit by this. I know many people are going through these similar frustrations in an ongoing basis, so much so that they're moving out of the state of California because of the school system, which it used to be they used to move here because the system was so good. So we are in a sad state of affairs, I'm sad to say, but we have not given up. We're going to stand firm for our kids' future and for a quality education for every young person. We're going to educate, explain, share, enlighten, blog, write, research. But as I said earlier, researching the information so that when you speak, you have credibility is the important thing. So we're hoping you can learn from us each time how to increase your ability to be more proactive in your community. And I want to thank Beverly so much tonight for being with us. And I do have another speaker set up for the next time, but I am still learning how to post what my next speech will be. So you'll have to look for that on my Facebook page is where I will post anything about future radio shows at this point until I figure out that next level of the radio show. And I'm sorry for the technical difficulties tonight, Bev, but I did push the right button the first time. It just cut us off, and it had cut me off earlier, the system here, and I had to call back in again and start over. So,
oh, no.
They're having technical difficulties on their end. So, but it is smoother, I think, once they get it working here. So in the last couple of minutes, give us a recap of something an individual or family could go away with a little bit of a plan for if they wanted to take their young persons out of public school. Give them some direction from your experience, and then we'll after that we'll say goodnight.
Well, as I said, I found homeschooling to be one of the most rewarding things I've ever done with my children. It just means so much to be that close to your kids when they're growing up and you know, helping them learn and stuff. And, you know, go to your churches and ask if they would be interested in forming a homeschool support group and form one of your own in your churches and in your communities, in your neighborhoods. That's always an excellent road to take. And the other thing that I would like to touch on, I don't know, I'm sure you probably did touch on it, but is the SB 48. Everybody should go to the Stop SB 48 website and print off some petitions, take them out to your neighbors, get them signed, and get them sent back. But you have to print them off on legal size paper, and it has to be front and back for them to accept them. So I strongly urge everybody to get involved in your own communities and get those things out. And let's try to get this thing stopped. I really hate to see what's going to happen when my 10-month-old grandson starts kindergarten and begins his life in school.
What was the website?
I believe I'm just guessing here, but I think if you Google Stop SB 48, I think it will probably come up on your search.
Okay.
That's the best way to get about it. Otherwise, I'll go in and I don't know. Do you have the I thought I saw you post a petition.
I did post it, and from my memory, I thought it was stop48.com. But we'll post it again on our Facebook pages for anybody who wants.
Yeah, I was going to suggest that we post it, and people go to it, and print off some of those petitions and get them out. Get them signed and circulate them. You know, go to your neighbors door to door. Go to your family members. Get signatures. I'm not sure how many signatures they need, but
I think it was 500,000, but it might be more. Tell them again what this issue was. I don't think we said that yet.
It SB 48 has to do with the now during social studies and stuff, they are to bring out anybody that was a homosexual in our history. They have to tell our children that these people were homosexuals and this is what they did and they contributed this. So in other words, it's bringing out all the contributions of homosexuality of homosexuals, which to me, I don't think a sexual preference should have any a factor in our history or social studies. I don't,
whether you agree with it or not, I think,
yeah,
you know, it's
exactly.
Just not
it's nobody's
appropriate
business.
Material for those classes, especially down to kindergarten.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, this is something that Californians have got to stand up against. And, you know, we all voted down the gay marriage. And this has a lot to do with that, too. I mean, it's a gay agenda, and that's basically what it is. And we need to quill it, that's all.
Well,
and
I
can
tell
say.
You from first-hand observation that this is directly coming from the organization profession through NEA and CTA,
mm-hmm.
because I saw it in action. So it is part of the agenda that those on the left who are in education want in our schools. Now, we do not have any bias or ill feelings toward any gays or homosexuals. It's just that we don't feel that it's appropriate to be included in the curriculum and way it is, in which that it highlights them, and what it does is highlights really everyone's sexual preference. You know, it would know who which ones are heterosexual as well, because they wouldn't be mentioned that they're gay. I mean, just to highlight that at all is unusual for an academic focus. And if you were going to talk about it at all, it should really be in junior college or a community college or perhaps 12th grade. But it's just material that's too out of the thinking realm for young people.
Right. It gets too explicit. Because they even have other classes that are now going on, from what I understand, where, you know, things are discussed that are very explicit, and I don't think children really can. Most kids that are entering puberty, you know, they're dealing with their own hormonal changes.
Mm-hmm.
They're dealing with their own identity crisis. You know, they're trying
mm-hmm.
to figure out who they are and where they're going and what they're going to be when they get older, and just to throw this in there. Does nothing but promote it, as far as I'm concerned. And frankly, I don't care what people do behind closed doors. It's none of my business who you share your life with, but doggone it.
Or who you love.
It is my
business. You can love whoever you
want.
That's
right. It is my business when you start telling me that my child has to accept that lifestyle if I don't believe it's right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the way I see it.
Another thing is our young people need an objective forum to develop their own sexual and individual identity. We all know that adolescence is a tumultuous set of years there in which they are feeling their raging hormones and figuring out issues and trying to figure out their thoughts about everything and figuring out who they are. And they need about... until they're about 20 before they're really thrown all that information. They're given so much already from the media, from TV, from commercials, They get so much in everything else. Why not have a school environment that is academic focused? That's my view. I think we need more of an academic focus in which they can get a knowledge and memory bank of good quality information about subject area of reading, math, writing, critical thinking skills, science, foreign languages, having debate teams, learning how to speak in public with information that they've researched that as an expert because they've really worked hard. It's a totally different viewpoint of what the left wants for school and what the middle and the right want for school. And I'm going to stand up for what I believe is best for our kids, do the best I can. I know Beverly is too, and we're going to be closing up here in a minute or two, and we want to thank you so much for joining with us tonight. And we hope you'll join us next month on the first Wednesday of each month from 8 to 9 p.m. And I apologize for technical difficulties, but I have heard even Mark Levin have technical difficulties. So it's not just my show. It's whatever system that we're using, how it works, whether it cuts you out or not. I know how to press buttons. So fortunately, it's archived, and we can go back and share this and listen with it, with others at your leisure time. So thank you so much for being with us tonight, and thank you again, Beverly. And I have pushed the button for the music, and it just circles around, so I'm going to try another one. It's not me, folks. Okay, thank you so much. Have a great night. We'll look forward to seeing you next time. God bless you. God bless America. And next time, I hope we talk more about the budget. I was really into the budget crisis of the nation, and that affects all of us and how we spend money for education. And we have to fight for the budget so the money is spent in the areas that will give a positive effect upon our youth and our nation. God bless you. God bless America. And may your life be wonderful. Good night, all. See you next time. Love you, love you. Hamara sukoon.